Good afternoon, seekers. My name is Damon, and I am an alcoholic. And what that means for me is alcohol is not my problem. You know, it was my solution. Anybody, you know, for when I got restless, irritable, and discontent, that was my solution. Welcome to the workshop at the Alatoona Roundup. And this workshop is on unity, the most cherished quality. And what I want to do is, if we can, let's start the meeting off in the usual manner with the serenity prayer. And I do like to pause a little bit extra and just invite God in here for this. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, so we have a little thing called the International Convention coming in 2015, the first weekend in July in Atlanta. And we have this format is based on the format that they will be using at the International. And I thought it would be a good way for us to get a little familiarity with what that format is. And hopefully, how many people here are looking to volunteer at this thing? So it's going to be a lot of opportunities. I've heard that they are going to begin working to pull volunteers in September. So there's going to be more will be revealed there. What we have here is we have there's three speakers, and we're all from myself, and the three speakers are from one of the four zones in District 14, or that's right around here. And I've picked the topic, unity, the most cherished quality. And for me, a lot of that had to do with this understanding that at the heart of actually all the great religions, one of the things I learned years ago was the concept of unity. And it's sort of what each and every one of us is seeking at some point. And anyway, I also know this, that an alcoholic in our cups is one of the loneliest creatures on earth. And when I first came in, I felt a connectedness because somebody reached out. And you told my story. And I realized I was not alone. So I do want to thank the committee, because you guys have done a lot of work to pull this together. This doesn't just happen, and it's been a full year in going. So I do want to thank the committee for all their work. So since we're going to be ending right at right around 2:35, without further ado, I'm going to introduce them. By the way, the speakers are in order of years of sobriety. I'm the baby here with 10, and Sharon L. from 14D is, all right, got a fan club, all right. Our sobriety date is 3/13/97. She's past GSR, alternate DCM, and current DCM for 14D. So Sharon, please come on up. Sure.
Well, I don't know how much that opening warmed me up to do this, but my name is Sharon, and I am an alcoholic. I'm going to start us off with a joke today because it'll relax me, and hopefully it'll relax you, but it's really more for me than you. This is about meetings in hell. I don't know whether there is a heaven or a hell, but I'm certain that there is. There will be AA meetings in both places. The only difference between that and hell, there will be advice giving and cross-talking. Thank you, Grapevine. Thank you, Damon, for nominating me. And I do mean that in a very kind way. Because I did not nominate myself. I got sitting there thinking as he was sharing that each DCM is to nominate someone. I didn't nominate myself. It wasn't all about me on that one. Damon so kindly did. I've asked to talk today on unity, our most cherished quality, and I have notes because I'm just not that smart to remember everything, so I will be looking down and I will remember to look up. First of all, I'd like to welcome you all to the Alatoona Roundup, and my name is Sharon Logue, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 3/13/97, and I am your DCM for 14D. My home group is the Dallas group in Dallas, Georgia. I am honored to have the privilege to stand before you today to share with you on Unity, our most cherished quality. Because without service to you and Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be sober today. I have a special place in my heart for service and the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has given me a new life. Unity has given me a group of people who share a common problem, who give love and support necessary to maintain our sobriety. Unity starts at the group level. So in your home group, remember how important you are. Everyone goes to Macon thinks that it all is about that delegate standing up there, or them in New York. Unity starts at the group. The group is the most important in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our 12 traditions apply to the life of this fellowship. This outlines the means in which Alcoholics Anonymous maintains its unity, and it relates to the world about it, the way it lives and grows, and that's from Bill W. In recovery, we carry the message to others. We do this in unity with our higher power. There is no recovery without a higher power, and there's no unity without recovery. And there is no, let me turn my page, no service without unity. Being in service, we get close to our higher power. We get closer to our higher power, and I've learned to let go of my ego and to replace it with acceptance that everything is just the way it's supposed to be. It may not be perfect, but is the way it's supposed to be in God's eyes. And I hated that part in the big book when I was going through something when I was, you know, like 30 days and everything was a big crisis to me. And my sponsor told me to read on acceptance. I called her back and I said, really? You want me to do this? And she said, just try it. And it is my favorite in Alcoholics Anonymous today. It may be the perfect way it's supposed to be, but in God's eyes, unity, not always respected as essential part of recovery. But we're missing out on so much. Unity means being of one mind and soul, like one heart beating, through the heart beating, through all of us reaching out to the alcoholic who's still suffering. Unity in Alcoholics Anonymous means the acceptance that it takes all of us and that our conscience is at work with us in united effort and our individual support. I stand here today and I'm in awe as I see my higher power at work, and I feel humbled yet honored to be a small part of this greater whole. Our road to recovery may seem so much alike, yet it is different. For each one of us, we have been beaten down and held back up on our feet. Through the 12 steps in our higher power, but our individual stories, how we were brought down, and how our unique journey back to sanity, and are distinctive as our fingerprints. And as different as it was with us, is as unique as it will be for each newcomer. I think that I can survive as an individual and help others without AA unity. I'm pushing my higher power out, pushing him right out of his seat and taking his role. Then, I am in service despite him, and I'm not in service to him. I will start blaming that newcomer for his own failures, because he didn't follow my instructions. I then become blind to my own defects, and eventually I lose my spirituality, and I risk my own sobriety. One of the chief gifts of my life has been to know that I will have no message to give unless I recover in unity without Alcoholics Anonymous principles. Unity without service positions filled, we would not have a fellowship. We would not have a fellowship or meetings to go to. I believe that service work is a vital part of my personal 12-step work. Helping others, our 12 steps to recovery are to help us as individuals and to maintain our sobriety. The 12 traditions guarantee AA unity. The traditions contain not a single "you don't" and they repeatedly say, we ought to. But never, you must. I'm responsible for my own recovery, but I have to give all my credit for my sobriety to God and to the 12 steps of recovery. I learned from people of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, those people who are active doing service for this group. Unity plus service equals recovery. A process of growing and living in today. Without unity and service, and the average alcoholic recovery would be impossible to achieve. We have to stand united to ensure our own recovery. We get sober together through unity. Unity has given me a group of people who share a common problem, who give love and support. It's necessary to maintain our sobriety. Unity starts at the group level. The 12 traditions apply to the life of this fellowship. This outlines the means in which AA maintains its unity and relates to the world about it. So as I leave you today, please think about the second tradition. Second legacy. Unity, the body of AA. Not a part, but the body. When I think of a body, I think of a whole. We have a lot of individual parts inside of that body, but a body is the whole of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ask yourself these questions. Do I have a home group? Am I a participant in that home group? Is the door open for that newcomer? When I am at group conscience, am I following our 12 traditions? I'd like to thank all of you today for allowing me to be of service to you and to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous.
All right, next we have Danny J. from 14A with 24 years, and he's listed as the local historian and overall go-to guy. So, Danny, come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Danny Janis. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Rome Group in Rome, Georgia. My sobriety date is October 29th, 1989. And what that means to me is if I manage to not drink for the next couple of months, I'll have 25 years. And further, what that means to me is that is absolutely the longest time I've been able to commit myself to anything, including two previous marriages. And unfortunately, if I stay sober, I'll always be sober longer than my current marriage. We've only been married for 20 years. And I'm not about to drink just to change that. There's a lot of things I'm willing to do for marriage, but that isn't one of them. When Tom, our DCM, contacted me about this event, and he said the topic was going to be unity, I knew exactly what I was going to talk about. And let me read it to you. It's from the big book. It says, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. And I knew that because, see, here's the deal. For me, this whole program is about the spiritual experience. And if I read that and I talk about that, that's what I'm all about. But unfortunately, Tom asked me about this about 2.5 months ago, and I've had time to think about it. And I've had time to meditate on it, which is the same as thinking for me. Anyway, I don't know, but it is. And so I, you know, my sponsor has always said to me, whenever I've come to my sponsor, and I'm going to name his name, Rick, that's all you need to know. Whenever I went to Rick with the problem, he always asked me if I invited God into the situation. And so, 2.5 months ago, my mind took me there, and then I heard Rick say, have you invited God into this? And I asked God what I ought to talk about. In the realm of unity, and I think God pointed me in another direction. I'm not so sure, but I think so. So I'm gonna, and historian, thank you very much. I suffer with that. I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sure a lot of you know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't want to bore you with this, but this is the way I see this concept of unity. In his book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, William James talks about the fact that all truly transforming, what he called religious experiences, were based on complete deflation of the ego, followed at once by a sense of hope. And so in the realm of Alcoholics Anonymous, what does that mean? Well, I go back to Dr. Bob. Because, you see, Dr. Bob knew for several years prior to meeting Bill Wilson that he had a problem with alcohol. And he joined the Oxford Group because he somehow suspected that applying spiritual principles in his life could affect his drinking. He didn't know he had to stop drinking. He thought he could just pray about it and he could probably keep drinking and not get so drunk. I know a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that seem to think that today. Anyway, unfortunately, he also knew Henrietta Seiberling, who was very compassionate towards Dr. Bob, and she, we don't know how this happened, but she was inspired to arrange a meeting of the Oxford Group the first Sunday in May of 1935. She loaded the table with people that were willing, that were prominent in the community in Akron, Ohio, that were willing to tell their secrets, and they did. And Dr. Bob was the last to speak, and he said something along the line, this is all in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, by the way, if you want to read it. And he said something along the lines of, well, you people have certainly revealed a lot about yourselves that could cost you a great deal, and I guess I ought to do the same. I'm a secret drinker, and I can't stop. And the group asked him if he would like them to pray for him, and he said yes. And so they started praying, and Henrietta Seiberling particularly prayed. She was a woman of great faith. And 2 weeks later, Bill Wilson called her up and asked if she knew any drunks that he could talk to, and she was floored because she knew her prayers had been answered. And then Bill came and told Dr. Bob what the real problem was. Bill Wilson gave Dr. Bob that little bit of hope. See, I think he had been deflated at depth in that first admission, and then Bill Wilson came along and gave him a little bit of hope. So here's the thing from the big book. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in the early days of October 1989, much like Damon, I think, and Kevin said, alcohol was not my problem. I had a world of problems, but it was my current wife, frankly, and it was my current job. And it was a lot of other things, my ex-wife, and a lot of, but alcohol was my solution, you know. Alcohol was my solution to everything. And circumstances, which I won't go into because it's not necessarily a part of this, suggested to me that I might want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like to say this, I don't know if it's really true, but I didn't drink on that day. And I like to say that I probably concluded that it would be better if I wasn't drinking if I was going to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I know that's not a requirement. But I thought, I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't know anything. All I knew was drinking and drunk. And that's not alcoholism. And that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, so I didn't drink and I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was attracted immediately and forever. I was hooked. I was hooked like a bass. I was hooked, and I didn't know why, frankly. But today I know that the reason I was hooked was because in that group of, by the way, that was in Homestead, Florida. I got to give them credit. That was the Homestead group in Homestead, Florida. And what I found there was a group of people who, and I'm going to get unity into this thing right now. They were unified. Incredibly unified in their ability to tell the story of alcoholism to people like me. They did that by sharing their experiences while drinking. And every time I went to another meeting, I heard one more of those people tell one more of those stories, and a little something happened in Danny's brain, and it sounded like, oh, God, that's you. You did that. You thought that. You felt that. You've been there. And over and over and over and over again. So from about the 9th or 10th of October until the 29th of October, I heard that over and over and over again from those people. And on the 29th of October, in this group, they had a microphone, a portable mic. Had a little battery in it. You hooked it up. You turned it on. Didn't work. Hadn't worked for years. Hadn't worked for years before I got there. But they passed it around the room as a place marker so that people could, you know, they knew who was next. And everybody, that they would all pick it up and hold it up to their mouth like it worked. You know? Anyway. So when it came my time, they passed it to me and I held it up. You know, that's what you do, right? That's what you do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You do what you see people doing. It's crazy as it seems. You do it anyway. But here's what I said. I said, and I remember it. There's a few things in my life that I remember as clear as the day. I said, I don't know what you people have done to me, but I am here to tell you today that I know that I'm alcoholic. And that was, I don't know how it worked out, but that was right at the end of the meeting, and then they gave out the chips, and I took a white chip. And I'm not bragging. I'm just reporting. It's the only white chip I've got. Relapse is not a part of recovery. It's a part of some people's stories, but so far it's not a part of mine. And the next thing that happened, and I'm going to bring unity back into this, was I started to hear the solution. It took about 19 days to understand the problem, and then I started hearing the solution from the same people. It was almost, I know today, they were talking about the problem and the solution all at the same time, but I can only hear the problem. Until, like Dr. Bob did, until I recognized and admitted that I had a problem, I couldn't hear the solution. All I could hear was the problem. As soon as I recognized and admitted and accepted, I don't know how much accepted, but I did that deal and I took that chip, I started hearing the solution. And they started saying, and in unison, every single one of them. There was like 20 people at that meeting every day, 7 o'clock in the morning, every day, same 20 people. And they gave the same solution. Don't drink, no matter what. Every morning when you get up, pray to whatever God you think there might be and ask him to keep you sober. They were very specific about that. They didn't say pray to God and ask him to keep you sober. In fact, they explained to me that God wasn't interested in helping me do my will, no matter how noble it was, that I should pray to God and ask him to keep me sober. And then I should go about my business through the day as though he would do that. And at the end of the day, when I was sober, they told me I was going to be sober, so I took them at their word, and by golly, I was. They said, when you go to bed at night, pray to whatever God you think there might be and thank him for keeping you sober. And do that day after day. And I heard that from everybody in that meeting that had an opportunity to share every day, over and over and over again. And I began to apply that in my life. You know? I mean, it was simple stuff. Pray to whatever God you think there might be. The first thing I said was, I don't believe in God. They said, we didn't ask you if you believed in God. They said, pray to whatever, here's the trick. They said, pray to whatever God you think there might be. I would challenge you to get out of that. Each and every one of us thinks there might be some kind of God. It may not be the God of Genesis, but each and every one of us, it says in the big book, deep down inside every man, woman, and child was a fundamental idea of God. So inside of every one of us is some concept. Pray to that. It doesn't matter what you call it. Pray to that. Well, the next thing I said was, I don't believe in prayer. They said, well, you could pray about that. You can't deal with people like that. You know? You can't deal, you can't get out of that. That's a trap you can't get out of. You know? Anyway, those people in that group, and I always reflect back on those people in that group because they were the ones that set me on a course that changed my life. You know, they were totally committed to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were committed to the idea or the ideal of explaining the disease concept of Alcoholics Anonymous to the newcomer. They were committed to the idea or the ideal of explaining the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to the newcomer. It worked for me. It worked for me. And I've carried that with me to every meeting I've gone to because, see, it's my only story. It's the only story I got. I came here and I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. And you know what? I didn't. I had a problem with life. But I used alcohol to treat that problem. And until I stopped drinking, I couldn't treat the real problem. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, out of love for me, and they, none of them knew me. There's not one single person today that I know of for a fact in Alcoholics Anonymous that I ever drank with. So those total strangers cared enough about me to give me what they gave me. And they taught me to treat other people the same. And even though I don't like a lot of people that I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm charged with telling them the story. Because that's the only story I got. I mean, if I'm going to stand up here and talk to you about anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the only story I got. So I don't have to like you to tell you that story. I just got to love you. And I do. And I'm very grateful. And thank you.
Thank you, Danny. And third, we have Kevin M. from 14B with 29 years. And what I found out in talking with him yesterday, he's a great fan of Clancy's. So we can forgive him later for that. Also a Pat Wheeler, who from over in the Howe place that I never had a chance to meet, actually. But anyway, I do want to bring on now Kevin M. Come on up.
Damon, thank you very much. My name's Kevin Morrissey, and I'm a real alcoholic. Yeah. Hello, everybody. First thing I need to thank Damon, Don, and the committee, if any of you are here, who had a role in asking me to be part of this program. I sobered up here in Cartersville. The only thing that I've, paralleling something Danny was talking about, you know, not much is he done longer than he's been sober. The only thing that I've done longer than as many years as I've been sober is lived here in Georgia. I came here a week after I graduated from high school in 1974. I came from a suburb of Chicago. When we moved out to that city when I was in first grade, there was less than 8,000 people. 11 years later, there were 48,000 people. When I came here to Georgia, my high school graduating class was three times larger than the population of Cartersville High School. It was culture shock. And that kind of played a role in my drinking. At that time, you could drink in Georgia at 18, but you couldn't drink on Sundays anywhere in Georgia. My 18th birthday was on Sunday. The following Friday, I decided that I was going to paint the state red. I took off. First place I hit was it's now an antique store down on the right across the county line on 41 in Ackworth called the Blue Room. And I just kept, and if anybody knows that place, those were the kind of places I drank at. These were the type of places you checked your gun or knife at the door. But the reason that I was attracted to those places, my father was an alcoholic. My mother tossed him out of the house when I was in sixth grade, and he went to live with my grandmother. She lived in a small apartment building. On the corner of that building was a tavern. They had a pinball machine, a bowling machine, and a pool table, and it was fine with my brother and I if Dad wanted to go in the tavern because there were toys in there that we liked. It was a dark place. It was dingy. It was dirty. I shudder to think what kind of... I don't even think they washed the glasses in that place. I shudder to think what kind of disease may have been floating around in there. But anyways, that was the type of place I knew. Prior to that, well, my parents were still together. My father used to go to the VFW on Saturdays, and he would drag my brother and I over there. And it was basically the same type of place. Moving up to my drinking, though, I was, you know, when I look back, you know, my very first drink, I felt like, man, this is the answer to life. For the first time in my life, I felt bigger than what I was, smarter than what I was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just instantly felt the way that I thought other people felt about themselves. Growing up, I was always very skinny, underweight. I always wanted to play football. I always wanted to be a free safety. I didn't want to be a quarterback or running back. I wanted to be a free safety. I wanted to strip some guy's legs out from under him and see him tumble onto the turf. But I was always 5 pounds too light to be able to play. Anyways, that night when I had my first drink, I felt like I was big enough to play football. Come down here. I'm 18. I, you know, have the free will to, you know, drink as I want. And mother really never said much about it. But drinking really never caused that much of a problem at home yet. It would later. Some of the things that my drinking caused was my family started capturing me and locking me up in these places that wouldn't let me out. Never was in a treatment center because my insurance wouldn't pay for substance abuse, but it would pay for psychiatric treatment. Never understood that. Still to this day, I don't understand that. But anyways, so I refer to it as a nut house because I was always in there with crazies. I mean, when you're in there with people who are paranoid, schizophrenic, I mean, it is a little daunting. Most of my drinking was primarily periodic. I was really not a daily drinker. My periods of sobriety could be either a few days, a few weeks, and even at times a few months. The last of my drinking actually started on Christmas Day, or actually Christmas Eve. And I had been good for a couple of months. And it was Christmas, and I felt I deserved a drink to celebrate me being good. And I remember my mother saying, if you have that drink, you won't spend Christmas here. And I did not spend Christmas there. drinking was more important to me at that time in my life. That started 4 months of daily drinking for me. I had never drank that long in my life. So when I look back, I truly see the progression that Bill Wilson talks about. When I came into the program on April 14th, 1985, actually, that's the date of my last drink. My last drink was on Sunday. When I came into this program was on the 18th on Friday night. On my first psychiatric hospital stay, one of the counselors there finally convinced me to go to a meeting there on campus, and I went, and it was a speaker meeting. And that's really all I knew about AA. When I decided to come into the program, or when everybody else said, you need, this is what you need, and I really didn't see where my drinking was a problem. It was still, if so-and-so would leave me alone, if so-and-so would not do this to me, if, the banks would get off my back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My first meeting was on Friday night at the Presbyterian Church, and it was in a slightly different location than where they meet now. It was downstairs, but I thought that this would be a speaker meeting like my first meeting. So I waited till a few minutes after 8, thinking I could sneak in. Didn't work out that way. It was a discussion meeting. But this is where I didn't realize what I was going to be learning this, but where I began learning how important unity is to this fellowship and all of us staying sober. If you can imagine a rectangular room, in the middle of the room, tables fashioned in a rectangle as well. The door is over there. The only empty seat is on the edge of this table. But the man who came and greeted me was sitting where this young lady is sitting at. He got up, came and met me at the door, extended his hand, and offered me a cup of coffee. And I hadn't shaken hands with anybody in a long time. There was actually, the only person from that meeting who's alive other than me today is Neil. Jerry knows who I'm talking about. Everybody else, has gone on to their reward. Except I'm not sure about the man who greeted me. But anyways, there was a person at that meeting who was the mother of my brother's first girlfriend here, and she offered to meet me at the Sir Club the following day and introduce me to some people, and she turned me over to this little old man named Albert. And after the meeting, Albert made me pick up all the ashtrays at the table I was sitting at, and I thought, well, Jesus, I wanted to throw that old man through the window. I really did. But he understood how important any level of service work can be, and how when you get involved with service work, you begin to feel a part of something, and that's what I needed. In the beginning, it started with picking up ashtrays. My fourth meeting, though, something happened that I hope I never see. I got there right about 7 o'clock. Door was open. One of the previous 3 nights had told me, you know, come about an hour early and, you know, come early and stay late. Anyways, I get there at 7. I sit down at this chair. The man who would be my sponsor, my first sponsor was there. He came and he shook his hand and introduced himself. We had met about 10 years before that. He didn't remember, but I did because he said something about my drinking that morning. A few minutes later, this buffoon comes in and he proceeds to tell me I'm sitting in his seat. And I didn't know better. So I went to get up, move, and my sponsor, or the man who would become my sponsor, told me to keep my butt right where it is and told that buffoon to take a hike and find another place to sit. The following night, I came into a meeting, and this young lady who I knew outside of the fellowship stormed out of there because I walked in. By the way, we had never dated or anything like that. I just happened to know her. And a couple of days later, on a Thursday, some people were talking and they had gotten around to why so-and-so stormed out. And one of the people was talking and said, well, because Kevin came in a meeting. And, well, I heard that and that got me mad and I stormed out. And the sponsor to one of those people who was talking came out and grabbed me and dragged me back in. And after the meeting, sat down with me and explained to me that, you know, some people, I remember exactly what he said, some people have trouble placing principles before personalities, and that if I was going to stick around, I was going to have to get thick-skinned. You know, these are things that, you know, unite us and can also divide us. A couple months later, Jerry comes into the program. I didn't like Jerry at first. Jerry had the nerve to ask my sponsor to be his sponsor. But also, and I know Jerry would remember this, there weren't a lot of us sticking around. You know, and all of a sudden, I'm not the new kid on the block. And all of a sudden, I'm not getting all the attention I was getting. I remember talking to George about it, and George told me that I was going to have to pray for Jerry. You know, and George used to keep everything very simple. I was 2 years sober, and George started backing out of the program. He died sober, but when I was about 2 years sober, he stopped coming to meetings. And I used to talk to him about it every once in a while, and they never turned into arguments, but, you know, they almost got close. But he had always taught myself, and he always taught Jerry, you know, that, you know, winners go to meetings all the time. I always fall back on meetings. There's two things that I do. As of Friday, I changed jobs. For the last several years, I have been working a job where I drive a van over the road. I'm basically on call 24/7 when I'm home, and phone will ring. They'll tell me where to go pick up freight, and when I get there and get the freight picked up, they'll tell me where to deliver it. So I basically live in this van. I carry a big book in my suitcase. It's a paperback. One time I was snowbound in Missouri, and when the state Patrol got to me, I was sitting there on a seat reading the big book. I was bored, and you know, I just couldn't sit there. But I know me. I'm not saying that I was thinking drinking, you know, but I don't know how long I was going to be stranded where I was. And I remember both George and my second sponsor always telling me that the answer to your problems is in the big book. When when I sobered up, we used to tell people, don't drink, go to meetings, and things are going to be all right. And it's kind of true, but I have found that it's also kind of one of the biggest lies we can tell somebody. Like Danny was saying, if you drink like me, alcohol is not the problem. You know, I perfected drinking. I was great at drinking. You know, I could throw up, you know, after a couple hours and start all over. You know, I drank very well. Problem was, when I wasn't drinking, how do I live? How do I get along with everybody? How do I get along at work, with my family, friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I didn't know how to. When what I have come to, you know, so they made it easy on me. They told me, just don't drink and go to meetings. Well, that's, you know, that's easy. I cannot drink. Today, at least, and I can go to a meeting. And I did that for 2 years. I found myself miserable as I've ever been, and I found myself ready to take a drink. I remember I woke up on a Thursday, and I knew I was going to get drunk that day. But the only thing different about that morning than any other time was I did not want to drink. I've been sober long enough to know at this point here that drink, if I started drinking, I was going to get in some kind of trouble. Went to a meeting and I got a new sponsor at that meeting. But this was at the same time as Jerry, my first sponsor, was kind of backing his way out of the program. Always remained friends with that man. Just because he didn't go to meetings doesn't mean I couldn't still be friends with him. 4 years ago, we buried that him. Let me move up to kind of most recent my life in AA. This is another example of something that shouldn't happen, that undermines not only the unity but the lifeblood of AA. That's us. It's the newcomer. You know, I always say that, you know, thank you for the old timers. Unfortunately, those who were here, there's very few here in Cartersville that are here now when I sobered up. I mean, but, you know, Cartersville, when I sobered up, was God's waiting room. There weren't young people getting sober in 1985. I was a freak. I was 28 years old, and I think the closest person to my age, other than Neil, who I had mentioned earlier, was probably 45. But, you know, the demographics were different than they are today. And thank God for that. But you know, I was dragged. I've always been involved in some kind of service work. And what I have found is service work, more than anything else, makes me feel a part of something. And that is one thing that I'd always search for through the bottle, to feel a part of something. You know, I remember when we lived in the city of Chicago till I was 6 years old. And, you know, just right down the street for me was my best friend, Jackie Richardson. We did everything together. I remember that Saturday morning when we were loading the last of our belongings onto that U-Haul trailer to make the final move out to the house that my parents built out in the suburbs, and I thought, I don't want to leave this place. I was comfortable there. I had a friend there. I had a pal, a buddy. I was moving to a place, we were the first house in the subdivision. For 2 years, my parents had to wash the car every day because of all the dirt. It wasn't even a paved road yet. I'm going to say this one thing, then I'm going to get off. A couple of years ago, I found myself becoming the DCM for Bartow County here. And the first year, I thought I did fairly well. The second year, because I went into business and trying to build that business, I was a really lousy DCM. I was an absentee DCM. Anyways, that first year, GSR from one group had stopped coming to the GSR meetings. And the GSR was ignoring me, not answering the phone or responding emails. So I thought I would come to that GSR's meeting and ask what's going on. And the GSR wasn't there, but two of the members of that group basically told me that something I said had offended the GSR and that GSR wasn't coming back. And my response was, they were endorsing that. I said, oh, so you are endorsing somebody placing personalities before principles, and your group has absolutely no idea what's going on at the state level because your GSR is mad at me because of something I said. I will say this, and I mean this with all honesty, because I think that when someone is like that, they need to be run out of town on a rail. That is destroying Alcoholics Anonymous. Folks, I don't know how to stay sober alone. Never did it. The only thing that's ever worked for me was my fellowship with you people. Now, a couple of years ago, one of those persons moved, and I was glad. I don't want that kind of AA in Cartersville where I live. I'm sorry. No. If I offend anybody here about it, leave. No. I'm sober because of this fellowship. This fellowship put me in touch with the God that I understand today, the God that I turn to every morning. Say, it's your world. I'm in it. Tell me what to do today. And the first thing I know that I do is I don't pick up that first drink. I'm going to close with one thing. Let me say one other thing. If you're like me and you don't think you need to work the steps, you can read every book in the world that AA has published. Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age has three chapters devoted to unity, service, and recovery. If I remember my history right, Bill wrote more about unity in this book than he did service and recovery. I think that's something else. Last thing I want to read is something that I'm going to read this from you is Dr. Bob, and why Alcoholics Anonymous was so important to him. I spent a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. Number one, sense of duty. Number two, it's a pleasure. And I try to make meetings that I'm in fun. Yes, meetings can get boring. Number three, because in doing so, I'm paying back my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Now, not only do I thank my first sponsor, George, but I actually thank all you people for that. I used to come to a lot of meetings early and stay late and heard a lot of war stories. Finally, because every time I do so, I take a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Thank you very much.
And my name is Damon, and I am an alcoholic. There's two things, two words in the topic that are important to me. The one word is unity, but I think the other one is quality. And I think the two go hand in hand. When I was out there drinking, there wasn't very much quality in my life. And I heard Eric Clapton speak, and he said, acquisition is not where it's at. You know, and that's a guy who could acquire a lot. And he said, it's not where it's at. I'll tell you what, when I first came in, and this is kind of strange, but I looked up on the wall and I saw the traditions, the first meeting I was at, and I went, that could work, you know? I was a guy who was into business contracts, and I saw that as a contract, and I said, they have removed about every possible possibility for me not joining this. You know, which is sort of like Groucho Marx. You know, he didn't want to belong to any organization that would have him as a member. I tell you what, and I listened at one time to a guy named Wesley P. out of Pompano Beach, Florida, and he talked about practicing the traditions in his life. And this was back in 1978, was a talk. And the very first tradition is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And for me, what that was explained was unity is the goal. Everything else in the traditions are as a sacrifice that the group makes, but the individual ego makes in order to achieve unity. I want to take a moment to go through these as I've been able to apply them in my life. And let me tell you what, my wife has gotten a lot better since I've been doing this. You know, you guys have gotten a lot better since I've been doing this. And so number two is for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Although I heard it said once, we are but twisted servants. We do not govern. I think that fits too. You know, the idea today is when my daughter was 15, I said, well, I'm through being your father. I'm just going to be a resource. And she went, whew, you know. And Father Joseph Martin said something I thought was great. He said, the best advice I can give you is don't give any advice. You know? If I don't have personal experience, I don't know what I'm talking about. And not only that, I can never have personal experience about your experience. I can never know enough to tell you what to do. I can have theories about it, but that's all I can do. And we don't govern. Oh, man, what a load that is. Can you see the freedom from that? No longer having to govern. Number three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. I've decided not to have any rules for friendship. You know, I'm not going to say I'll be a friend with that person if they do this or if they act this way. You see, this was about business contracts. I realized I had all these secret contracts with secret clauses. Well, I assumed everybody else knew what the clauses were, and they just, you know, they just weren't holding up to their end of the bargain. They've never seen the contract, but, you know, they're not holding up to their end of the bargain, right? You know, and I realized that forgiveness from a financial standpoint is to tear up the contract before the person has met all of the qualifications for the clauses. So what if I can start off with not saying, meet everybody I meet, I can say, let me find out what's good about that person, you know? And it sounds like, I used to think that was a hard way to live, and let me tell you what, it's the easier, softer way, you know, to have no rules. It's been amazing. Number four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups as a whole. It's about that same thing. My daughter has her own life, you know? And my wife has her life, and I can let them be autonomous. Because what I recognize when I'm trying to manipulate somebody else is because I got a real small God. You know? I think it's about time. And when I get that way, I go, whoops, better get me a big God, you know? And I think the two words that come to me always, you know, I'll start my little yappy-yapping, you know, wake up in the morning sometimes, get all the stuff to do, and all of a sudden I stop and I go, oh, yeah, wonder and awe. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it's about, wonder and awe. And how can I be in wonder and awe and be resentment at the same time? It's not. About this moment, about being alive. I used to look at my hands when I was in middle school and draw them and do them. Everybody thought I was weird, so I stopped looking at them. I started looking at my hands again, and I go, this is amazing. You know, this thing called life is astonishing. But you know what it was for me and my drinking? It was not enough. To be some of the most amazing matter on this side of the universe was not enough. That's so much of the disease, isn't it? Did you ever get enough? You know, I found out I didn't want the stuff. I wanted the way I thought I would feel when I got the stuff. And I never got enough. Acquisition is not where it's at. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. My message with my family is a spiritual awakening. That's the message, to be and move in the presence of God. And I came in as an atheist, folks. I was not only convinced there was no God, I was convinced I could convince you there was no God. And today I move in the presence of something I don't even attempt to understand. I like Chuck Chamberlain when he said, justice without judgment. You know, a natural law, you know. It's like you don't have to have a court of law to decide whether gravity is going to apply, right? You know, it just is. And just to really, and Dr. Bob said, we all are looking for happiness and peace of mind. But we felt that the world should give us happiness and peace of mind in just the way we want it, insist upon it, which was by the alcohol route. And we weren't overly successful. You know, but he said, I can get happiness and peace of mind. But there seem to be a few simple rules that I need to follow. Isn't that great? Just a few simple rules that I need to follow. So six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. When I got put on probation, I was working for a big computer company, and that was in April of 2001, and I quit drinking. On my own. Didn't know anything about AA. Put on the afterburners. You know how we can do when we quit? You know? And we can really show up and do the job. And then the CEO laid off everybody that was on probation. And when I was driving home, I still remember coming down 75, and I realized I had lent my identity to that job. I had lent my identity to that outside circumstance. And a part of me was yanked away. Today I can be self-sufficient. I can be like number seven. I can be self-supporting through my own contributions because today I am enough. The circumstances come and go and change. I've had one of the most wonderful experiences in AA. Sounds crazy, but it's the day that my mom died and then the time that I got to be with her and be a caregiver to her. And to become spiritual with her. You know, we were like, don't shuffle off this mortal coil too fast to your reward. We would like to have you around. And I was also, the spiritual awakening was really coming, and there was a united thing there. And I got to be there for her and to do the things for her that she did for me when I was a little baby. You know? what a gift you guys gave me to be fully present there and not to plan my grief. Wonderful. 8, we should remain forever non-professional. You know, a professional is someone I pay to give me advice. You know? That, you know, the idea that a doctor really doesn't heal, they create the conditions in which healing might occur. And that's what we do here. We try and create the conditions in which that person might unite with us. And we're all united anyway. It's whether I recognize it or not. 9, AA as such ought never be organized. You know, I sit there and try and organize my day, and then at the end of the day, I'll look back and laugh. I mean, Bill tells us on 86, you know, upon awakening, you know, we think about, you know, the 24 hours a day, you know, and then it turns out I look back at the end of the day and it wasn't anything like I planned, but it was much better, you know. And, but AA as such isn't organized. The as such is one alcoholic talking to another. This committee needed to be organized. But one alcoholic talking to another does not need to be. The 10th is the most amazing one for me, which is the fewer opinions I have on outside issues, the less I get drawn into any controversy. How many times have you gotten in trouble because of negative opinions? But I've never gotten in trouble by having a positive opinion about you. 11, about anonymity. What I love about 11 is the long form. It says we prefer to have our friends recommend us. I don't need to be promoting me, you know. It's unnecessary because I'm at my destination. I'm at the only destination there's ever been, which is right here, right now. If I'm not looking to be there, if I'm giving up becoming, if I let go of becoming because it's very unbecoming, then I can just be here today with you. And finally, 12, anonymity. In the spiritual foundation is to be without name. That there is no name that really suits any one of you. There's no one thing. I think name calling somebody name, that's what offends us, is it calls belittling, you know. And also, there's this idea of who are you between your thoughts? Who are you between your feelings? What is it what is unchanged since your earliest memories? That which is without name. The very essence of life. And to me, that is what awakens. And it's also the thing can watch my thinking while it's happening. What does it say on 87 and 88? We pause when agitated or doubtful. By the way, I add, or cocky. That works for me. You know, and what do I pause? I pause everything. Sometimes I go to I like the stop signs. I like going to the long line, you know, at Walmart. Slow it down. You know, when we pause in the prayer, slow it down. Just climb in between the thoughts for a moment and be right here, right now, in the presence of a loving God. Thank you. I want to thank the speakers. Great job for all of you. And we will come down and let's form a circle and close with the Lord's Prayer.